Joining us is Dennis DeAugustino. And, Dennis, I see at the ballpark all the time. Works for various news agencies that come through. And Dennis is one of the leading experts, I think, a leading historian and accomplished author and practitioner of the oral history of baseball. Dennis is a resident down in Huntington Beach. His wife, L.A. Times sports columnist Helene Elliott, the 2005 winner of the Hockey Hall of Fame's Elmer Ferguson Award for Distinguished Hockey Journalism. But Dennis is a star today, and his book is called Keepers of the Game. And, Dennis, welcome to the show. And the little part on the cover says, when the baseball beat was the best job on the paper. And this is a very important book. It's a, fans, I will tell you this, you know, I love the authors, I love the books. This one you want to get because this connects so much of what baseball is all about. Dennis, tell us about the book and how it came about.
Well, Marty, the book actually came about through a decades-long love affair that I've always had with baseball and how I was first exposed to the game, which really was like we were all were, through the beat writers. There was a time when the beat writer job on a major metropolitan newspaper was not only the most sought-after job on a newspaper, the most secure job on a newspaper, but the most read position on a newspaper. Back in those days, the beat writers were your primary source for all of your baseball news. Of course, through technology and everything else that's happened, that world really doesn't exist anymore. But I was lucky enough to be exposed to it at a very early age. I got into it at a very early age at the Associated Press in the early 80s. And this book, which came out in 2013 from Potomac, was really a love letter to that whole profession and a lot of gentlemen that exposed me to the game at a very early age.
Dennis, I want to ask you about the J.G. Spink Award, the award that's given that puts a writer in the Hall of Fame every year. It's an award that's grown. Jason Stark got it this year, a guy I've been reading for a number of years. There's something that's so fascinating and fantastic about the Baseball Hall of Fame is you get broadcasters, you get writers, you get executives. Talk about maybe some of the Spink Award winners that you spoke to and what their impact was on this book.
Well, when I did the book, I did the interviews in a period from 2010 to 2011. And I included 20-some-odd writers in the book. It's an oral history. And my criteria was twofold. Either the living Spink winners, and I was lucky enough at the time to have gotten them all, except for Charlie Feeney, who you may remember was a beloved figure first in New York and then in Pittsburgh. Pally, who he called everyone, and we always called him, was starting to have some major health issues at that point, so I could not get to him. But I had all of the living Spink winners, and I also wanted historical reach. In other words, the farther back you went with covering baseball on a beat writer basis, the more I wanted to interview you. In other words, if you could tell me what it was like to send a game story via Western Union teletype, which is probably a set of words that most of your listeners probably just had no idea what I just said.
I barely know what you said, Dennis.
I wanted to speak to you, but at the book came out, all of the living Spink recipients were in it except Pally Feeney. And, of course, since 5 or 6 years have gone back, since then, and now I'd like to go back and sort of do the book over again, and Smith and Tom Gage and everyone who has won the Spink since then, and get them in there, too, maybe someday.
Dennis DeAugustino is with us, Keepers of the Game, when the baseball beat was the best job in the paper. Nick Peters, of course, the Spink Award winner from the Bay Area here, covered the Giants for so many years. You got to speak to him. Tell us about Nick Peters.
Well, many of the writers that I talked to in the book I had known already from my years at the AP and then subsequently with the New York Mets throughout the early 80s. And Nick was somebody that I had already known. I was very lucky, as I look back on it, where I used to sit at Shea Stadium next to Jay Horowitz. I had Jay on my left side, and I had the visiting writers on my right side. And as I think back, what a treat that was. And I remember the Giants contingent coming in, and I'd always sit next to Nick. And Nick would be in his Hawaiian shirt and tell these wonderful stories about traveling the globe and jazz and the Greek culture and things like that. So many things that had absolutely nothing to do with baseball. But that was Nick, as you know. He was a very esoteric guy. And when I went to interview him for the book, Nick was just starting to have some health issues. He had retired from the business. He was still traveling. He still had his streak going of attending every Giant home opener, I think the first 55 or something like that. And he told me of the one near miss he had, and you probably know about this, is that he was coming back from Australia, and he got to the ballpark something like in the second inning, straight from the airport, to keep his streak alive. But Nick was a marvelous, marvelous, marvelous person, a marvelous writer. He covered the Giants on a beat writer basis longer than anyone. And, of course, Marty, when you work every day in the bunker, you pass the Nick Peters interview room at Oracle. And whenever I come up a couple of times a year, I always stop by. I wanted the book to be representative of all the markets. It couldn't just be a New York book or a Boston book. And I wanted several representatives from each market. Nick was my representative from the Bay Area. I wanted so badly to also get Ron Bergman in there, who we both remember, you know, so dearly. I don't know if any beat writer was more synonymous with the Oakland A's of the Charlie Finley era than Ron was. But at that time, Ron was having major, major health issues. And I could not get to him for an interview. So that's one omission that unfortunately is there. But Nick just was such a great friend and such a great writer. And especially for all you people up there, boy, do you miss them terribly, as we all do.
Dennis, you made a great point a moment ago in that pre-social media, pre-internet, the way you got your information was from the newspaper, and these beat writers were your lifeline to your professional team or to your favorite baseball team. Felt like you got to know these guys. You waited on every word, every sentence, every period for what it was that they had to say. Does that come through in this book, the feeling of I get to know these guys a little bit?
I hope so. I really do. We all remember reading the Sporting News. You'd get the Sporting News every week, and you'd have a Joe Falls from Detroit. You'd have a Wells Twombly from the Bay Area. You'd have an Earl Lawson or a Bob Hertzel from Cincinnati, or a Wayne Minshew from Atlanta. You got to know these names. And if you were young enough and impressionable enough and inquisitive enough, you looked at those bylines and say, boy, what must it be like to go to Atlanta every day and go to Atlanta Stadium every day and cover Hank Aaron, or go to Crosley Field and cover Pete Rose and Johnny Bench? You really got to know, or you thought you got to know, all of these individuals. And the writers, of course, back in those days, were major celebrities. They lived in the pages of the Sporting News, and we all remember, if we go back far enough, when every team's yearbook used to have a Meet the Press section, and there would be a two-page spread on all the writers, and I would be fascinated by that. Look at these guys. You know, they get to go to ballparks and write the game, and, of course, see games for nothing. Of course, what a thing, right? I hope I got to know them a heck of a lot better doing the book. Again, I was lucky in that a lot of them I had already known. Some of the guys in the book I just called blind. I had never had any contact with them, but a lot of them I had already known, and that helped me an awful lot when I was doing the book.
Well, the book is terrific. It covers baseball writing across the country, and I talked to Henry Schulman about this, and Adam, think about this as well.
Okay.
How many writers do we have that Henry goes back to 1989 when he started on the beat? How many do we have today who would make their whole profession writing baseball, and even for 30 years? And you think around the country, there aren't that many that do that. And what this book connects, it's the handshake back to the writers who did do that. So my question to you, Dennis, how was life different for the writer in those days? And each chapter is a different writer, so it's easy to pick the book up and you read about whoever you want to read about. But what was life like on a daily basis for a writer back in the 60s, 70s, or 80s, different than what Henry does today?
Well, I have the advantage in that a very close family member of mine, namely my wife, is very much involved in the world today as a columnist for the L.A. Times. And what Helene tells me all the time, and I'll bet Henry will say exactly the same thing, was that when you started in the business, and Henry started in the late 80s, I would imagine, you were always embedded with the team. Today we would call it embedded. But your days were very structured in that you went to the ballpark, you wrote the game, you wrote your story, you got your story in on deadline, of course, and then you went home. And your day was basically, and then the next morning at 8 or 9, you would start all over again. Happening today, and actually what has happened in the last 10 years, you're basically on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you're not writing for the paper, you're writing for the website. If you're not writing for the website, you're tweeting. If you're not tweeting, you're putting stuff up on your Facebook page. It is a 24/7 cycle now. And it's really no exaggeration to say that. And that's probably the biggest change. I'm sure Henry would remember, and Helene has told me about, you know, you'd write on an airplane. You know, you'd travel and you'd put your typewriter. There's another term that maybe nobody knows what I'm talking about.
What is a typewriter? What is that?
You'd put this thing called a typewriter, you know, on your tray table.
We call it a keyboard that actually printed.
Exactly,
when you touch
and you'd hang out a couple of stories, and you'd say to yourself, "Well, who's going to bother me? You know, on an airplane, it can be my sanctuary for the next 3 or 4 hours." That's not the world anymore. You're again with social media, it has become 24/7, and you are on call basically around the clock now, and you're working around the clock, and it's no exaggeration to say that anymore.
Yeah, you'd write on your typewriter under the whale oil lamp, right?
That's what, yes, you'd have that too.
One more question for you here, Dennis, is, and I'm glad you brought up the social media element, that it's a 24/7 job now. These guys are on call. You got to be watching transactions, waiting for news to happen so that you can tweet it out or post it for your fan base. I'm wondering how far out we are, and this is just an opinion thing, I think, for you, before we end up with some social media element to the Hall of Fame. Will we end up with some sort of writer because of his social media presence getting into the Hall of Fame?
Well, that is a very, very interesting question. And I sometimes wonder, not so much with the Hall of Fame, but with the new technology. 50 years from now, will we remember the great bloggers, the great tweeters, the great Facebook individuals? Will they be remembered in the same way as the Dick Youngs and the Jack Langs and the Nick Peterses and people like that? Because, again, the technology changes at warp speed. I mean, you talk about social media. When I did the book, I mean, we were already marveling at how fast the business was changing. But when the book came out 5 years ago, very few people had heard of something called social media. Now it drives the business without question. So you sort of sit here and you just marvel at how the technology has changed at warp speed, and you sort of wonder what is next. But it's funny in that you go back to the Spink Award. The Spink Award's always been cut and dry. It's always been great baseball beat writers. Well, that changed a couple of years ago when Roger Angel was, I believe, deservedly awarded with the Spink Award. My God, anybody that knows Roger, has been around Roger, knows that he was a worthy recipient of this thing. But Roger was not a traditional beat writer. You know, his deadlines were way, way in the future, and he wrote long form. So already we're starting to see a little bit of a change there in the Spink Award from the traditional baseball beat writer. And we can only imagine what lies 20 or 30 years ahead. I hope we're all around
Amazing.
For it. I hope we're all around to see it.
Amazing. Hey, Adam, maybe LOLKMBR will be in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, at least the Bay Area Hall of Fame.
Okay, all right. Hey, Dennis, great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. It was a long time to put this together.
But, I know, but let me tell you, it's worth it. Keepers of the Game, it's really good. Again, you could pick up any chapter. It's a different writer in every chapter, but very important book, a very important book. And we support the local bookstores, the Book Tree up in Montclair. David will have
wonderful.
It up there.
I love hearing it.
And, of course, you could get it any of the regular apps.
Amazon.com.
Yeah, thank you so much. Keepers of the Game, you being on. Have a good day.
Thank you so much. We're getting to a point in the season now. We're starting to say our goodbyes already. So I don't think you're going to see me for the rest of the year, but we'll make a date for next year. I'll see you up there. Thank you so much, and you have a great weekend.
All right, thank you. That's Dennis DeAugustino, Keepers of the Game. How'd you like that, Adam?
I like it, man. I mean, I was alive before social media happened. I used to wake up every morning and read the Sporting Green before I went to school. I'd read about 6 a.m., 6:30 a.m. I was reading John Shea and Henry Schulman and Bruce Jenkins, and those were my guys, even when I was a kid. Susan Slusser, trying to find out what was happening with the Oakland A's. So, yeah, I was a newspaper reader. This is important stuff for me.
Yeah, and maybe we'll talk about Bruce when he's on, but they go back to that era that Dennis is talking about. Henry does as well, and not sure how far back Andy goes. But Henry goes back, and he can relate to some of this stuff. So,
and the evolution of their writing, and now into this social media era. I mean, that's really the impressive thing. It's impressive that we've got guys like Kerry who are great young writers, and also on social media. But when you have a guy like Bruce and Henry who have not just done the, you know, we're joking about the typewriter and writing on a plane, but have now evolved into
You have to do it. You must evolve as the world changes. But that's what makes baseball baseball: the written part of it, and now the oral part of it, which we get a lot more of.
Agreed.
Everywhere you look.